You're listening to KCAW Sitka, and this is the first of three candidate forums in the studio right now. The four of the five candidates for Assembly, Michelle Putz, Matt Hunter, Phyllis Hackett, and Aaron Swanson. Dallas Peavy, the fifth candidate, called in to let us know he's a bit under the weather tonight and sends his apologies, and we certainly hope he feels better. We have an email question here, but I think the phone lines are ringing too, and I just want to make sure we get that phone on the air if that is a call for us. And indeed, it's ringing. So I'm going to just go to that line, and let's see here. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Erin. My question has to go back to this past assembly meeting.
Okay.
And it's about, do you think that people on the assembly who are out of town should be able to participate in an executive session and or vote when they're participating in the meeting during, like, on teleconference or whatever?
Okay, so during the last assembly meeting, Aaron, I believe there was an executive session. One of the assembly members was out of town.
Lynn McConnell.
And participating by teleconference. And your question is should they be allowed to do that?
Right. Only, like, from my point of view, is I don't think they should, because we can't make sure that nobody else is in the room with them. And how do we know that there isn't somebody in the room, or they're being bribed with something, or they're intoxicated, or things of that nature?
Okay, Phyllis, I'm sure not in that particular instance, but in general, it's a decent question. If you're having a closed door session and somebody's participating by teleconference, how do you know they're alone and following the rules of the executive session? Phyllis Hackett, should that be allowed to happen?
Well, you don't know if they're alone, and you don't know if they're following the rules of executive session. You can probably fairly well guess that people who may be in the room are not intimately involved in the executive session. But I did get your email, Aaron, and I think it's an interesting question. It's not something I ever considered before. But it may well bear conversation. I know that being able to participate telephonically was a hard-won battle, but I certainly am thankful for it. You know, being volunteer on the assembly, we do have other commitments, work and whatnot, that force us to miss assembly meetings, and it really is helpful to have as many perspectives as possible at the table. So as far as the executive session issue, I really don't know what to say about that. I don't really have a strong thought about it, but I think it's a question worth asking.
All right. Aaron Swanson, should folks be allowed to participate in executive sessions by phone?
I think they should be allowed to be participating in the assembly meetings by phone. Probably not so much the executive sessions, basically because you don't know if they're being influenced by outside opinions.
Who's in the room with them? Okay. Michelle Putz, executive sessions by phone, your thoughts?
It is an interesting question. I am glad that you can attend meetings by phone for sure. Maybe someday you'll have to go to video conference and then you'll have a better idea. You know, that'd be a good legal question, I think. But that is a good question and one that they're going to have to consider.
All right. And Matt Hunter, executive session by phone?
Well, I have served on a grand jury in the past, and we see cases from around the Southeast, and we interview people over the phone, and they're asked to swear that there's no one in the room, and it's secret. It's sworn secrecy. When it comes to the assembly meetings, I believe the city charter limits the number of participations telephonically by member to two or three per year, and that's, I believe, just to keep things more efficient and the added cost of setting up the phone. Trust those on assembly. There's a lot of stuff that can happen in executive session, and I think it should be I don't know. I guess I don't know what the law is there. So
barring any legal difficulties, the honor system.
Yeah, there's the honor system, and then we're representing the people. And I don't agree with everyone on the assembly, but if we cut people out just because they're out of town for business or whatever, then we're losing a voice that could be the only voice for a segment of our population.
All right. We have a phone call. Joseph, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Over the past 5 or 6 years, I've noticed that the volunteerism for reports and commissions have died down quite a bit. And a lot of that, from talking to people in town, is due to the assembly, you know, the word I'm looking for is like lack of leadership, you know, what they want the commissions to do, and basically ignoring what the commissions come up with. If you're elected, what would you do to help that along as far as your boards and commissions?
All right, and I think we're starting with Aaron on that one. Thank you, Joseph, for your call. Appreciate it. Go ahead, Aaron.
I'd definitely start by listening to the commissions and find out what it is that they recommend. Possibly, you know, maybe they need a commission to promote more commissions. So you definitely need to listen to what the commission has to say and take their advice, you know, to heart.
All right, Michelle Plitz?
I've heard that complaint as well, and one of the things that I would like to do if I get on the assembly, and heck, even if I don't, is suggest that one of the agenda items on every meeting needs to be at least a 15 to 20-minute discussion about each cycle through each of the plans that the city has that those commissions put together, and then ask the commission, each of those commissions, a specific question to find something out of the plan. Let's say the first question would be, help us find something that's in this your plan that helps us to develop the economy of Sitka, and ask the commission to come in and talk to the assembly and give us their ideas and start to run through those plans and start to use the good ideas that come out of those plans and those commission meetings. So that's how I think I'd work on it.
All right. Matt Hunter, boards and commissions.
Probably the best way to encourage people to be on the boards and commissions is to listen to them and be respectful of their opinions. We ask them to serve on a commission. We should listen to what they have to say and bring them into the conversation. The more minds we can get together to solve a problem, the better the solution's going to be, and the better people will like that solution. I was dismayed to see the Long Range Planning Commission disbanded a year or two ago. I think it's probably the most important commission out there, is figuring out what we're going to do in the future, especially when we're looking at problems like affordable housing, power, roads, all these things that are, if we don't plan in the long term, we might as well just not plan at all, because acting without a plan is about as inefficient as it gets.
Phyllis Hackett, paying attention to, recruiting for boards and commissions, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's an ongoing problem and situation, and our structure, the way we're set up, is a little convoluted. It makes it difficult to work with commissions. But the way the structure is set up is the commissions work directly for the assembly. But the assembly, being that the only time we're allowed to gather is at our assembly meetings, it doesn't really allow a lot of opportunity to provide direction to commissions. So it's a difficult structure to work within. I've had a lot of these ideas, and it was one of my main focuses when I got onto the assembly the first time, and learning more about how it works has made me realize how challenging it is. One thing that we have done since I've been on the assembly, I mean, not necessarily my doing, but we all agreed to, was reinstate the liaisons to the commissions. And every commission now has one assembly liaison and an alternate that they're supposed to be attending their meetings. Again, it's a volunteer position, and we get pretty busy, and attending a lot of meetings gets challenging at times, but we're supposed to be attending these meetings and acting as the go-between and being able to listen to the commissions and bring their status and their questions back to the assembly, and vice versa, and field questions and help them navigate the system as it is now. The commissions that are in existence don't really have a lot of, there's no funding for the commission. There's really no technical support or secretarial type of support for the commissions, and the staff is not really at their disposal because they work directly for the assembly. So it's a tough situation to navigate. It can use help. We've gotten some volunteers recently more, and we certainly would like to have more. I always pay attention to the commissions and honor what they say.
All right. We have a call. Tracy, you're on the air. Go ahead. Oh, okay. I think we lost Tracy, but we have another call. And Susan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
First of all, let me say thank you to the assembly candidates and Raven Radio for having this forum. My question to the candidates is, how do you feel about the existing right of the citizens of Sitka to have a vote with regards to the disposal of public property and resources? Do you support the citizens having a direct say in the disposal of large Sitka properties and resources?
All right, Susan, thank you for the call. I think actually we went through that a little earlier in the program.
Well, I apologize if I didn't hear it, but thank you.
No problem, and we'll be posting the audio from this show on our website, so you can go back and listen to the answers to all of the questions that the candidates gave. But thank you so much for your phone call, Susan. We appreciate it. If you have a question, the number is 747-5877, and we have a call or an email question here from Katie, and she asks the following, and Michelle Putz, I believe we begin with you on this one. Do we have Tracy back? Let's try Tracy again. Tracy, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad we got you back. I'm going to ask you to turn down your radio just a little bit there.
And, hang on a second.
Okay.
It's clear across the room. Yeah.
No problem. And if you're interested in giving us a call and you're listening to this at home, again, the number 747-5877. We're talking with the Assembly candidates here in our studios at the Cable House downtown Sitka. Tracy, do we have you?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
My question is, what do you see as the role of the Sheldon Jackson campus and its partners in the future of our city, and how would the city contribute to the revitalization of campus?
Okay. Thank you so much, Tracy. Appreciate it. Michelle, let's begin with you on that one.
Sitka is such a unique community already, but art is already this amazing thing in Sitka and could be bigger and better. I love the fact that we have Art de Grace in February, March. I'm trying to remember right now. I would love to see that turn into something that brings a lot of people to the community. I'd love to see art bringing, you know, new artists to the community that then brings people to the community. I see the campus itself and the students coming as, you know, future people who probably will say, I'd love to visit Sitka and bring my family with. So I think there's lots of opportunities that way. How can the city help? Certainly through, you know, they do some funding of not-for-profit things. I think literally us showing, you know, as they ask for volunteers, having people who are city assembly members being part of that workforce shows some support. I don't know what else. I haven't thought that one through so far, but it's a good question.
All right. Matt Hunter, how can the city support the Sheldon Jackson campus?
Well, short of additional monetary contributions, we need to continue to exempt them for educational purposes from the property tax, and we need to work with them, and our city staff should be directed to work with Fine Arts Camp, or at least listen to them and understand what the major issues are facing that campus. I'm sure there are a few, and make sure that through that process that they get the support they need to be successful. I see the campus as being the center of our community. Once again, it's growing. Again, there were 800 students there this past year. The Sitka Sound Science Center had held college classes there. If there's anything that's truly sustainable, it's education, because there's always kids. And we have such a unique place and such a wonderful place for the arts and sciences that the potential there, I guess I can't wait to see what happens, because that campus is the center of our community.
All right, and the question now to Phyllis Hackett, support for the Sheldon Jackson campus.
Well, one of the parts of the questions I think Tracy asked is, what is the city's role? And first of all, I really don't think that the city has a role in the Sheldon Jackson campus, because it is a private entity. It is a nonprofit, but it is a private entity. I do believe in continuing their property tax exemption for education, and that's actually a state law, and the state decides on that, though we do have some discretion there. But I do agree with that. Monetarily, it would be great for the city to be able to help. Unfortunately, at this point in time, the economy of the city is not such that we can go out and do a lot for individual entities, except for nonprofit grants and exempting property tax. It would be wonderful if we were at a point where we could help them with their utility costs, perhaps. It is something that we would have to spread across the board and offer to other nonprofits. So it's a challenging thing. I love Sheldon Jackson campus. I'm thrilled with what they're doing over there. I think it's a major economic driver for us. I do participate in the work parties, and I think that we could encourage more staff to do that and to perhaps listen to some of the problems they're having with their infrastructure and maybe help on those lines. But it's a touchy subject.
All right. Aaron Swanson, what should or can the city do for the Sheldon Jackson campus?
Well, I think that the city should continue their property tax exemption for the Sheldon Jackson, you know, campus, for the Sick of Fine Arts camp. I think that, you know, as far as grant money, if there's, you know, any program other than the city funding for them to dig into, I think they should, because I, like Phyllis said, that the city's budget is stretched pretty thin right now. I would like to see education, you know, coming back to SJ like it has been. I really like that they've added, you know, college courses.
All right, Phyllis, you're raising your hand over there. You have something else to add?
One more thing I would just like to add is one of the things that we have done and we can continue to do is give resolutions of support which help Fine Arts Camp and Alaska Arts Southeast get grants from all over. And I think we've been pretty good about that, and I think that that's something that we can continue, and it really is a significant assistance.
And I see some head nodding here in the studio. Anybody else have anything to add on the Fine Arts Camp? Okay. To email we go, and a question from Katie, who says, oh, no, I beg your pardon, to the phones we go. Katie, hang in there. We'll get to your email, but we've got Charles on the phone here. And Charles, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, my question is regarding the aspect of affordable housing. We've got it's probably one of our biggest issues in this community, in that we don't really have a lot of affordable housing. People who make even a decent salary can't find a place to live. And none of the kids who need to work some of the jobs that really support some of our tourism in those industries. What can we do to find more affordable housing?
All right. Thanks, Charles. Matt Hunter, we'll begin with you.
Affordable housing is the number one issue facing our community. And there's a couple different options that have come to the assembly table recently. One is opening the benchlands. I think that has the greatest potential to do the greatest amount to actually change that situation. I'd like to see smaller lots, small enough that the homes have to be in the $200,000 price range, something that people can get a loan for relatively affordably compared to everything else. But it's not just young people who are looking for houses. There's also the newly retired who are finding it very difficult to find adequate housing in this town. We need more senior housing. I think the city shops needs to be developed with affordable housing, and the benchland needs to be developed in a way that encourages affordable housing as well. And perhaps we need to look at our laws on rentals, or encourage people to rent out the apartments that they have in their houses, or the potential to make apartments, because there's definitely a need there.
All right. Phyllis Hackett, affordable housing in Sitka.
You know, I came to Sitka in 1972, and affordable housing was the question then, too. I remember living on a small little 17-foot boat trying to find a place to live. So this is not a new issue, and it is a very serious issue, and it's been with us forever, and I'm hoping it will always be with us forever on some level, I think, but I'm hoping that we can get a grasp on it. I think, you know, Matt is right. There is something we can do with the Benchlands property. It's not a slam dunk, do it tomorrow. It'll take a little bit of planning, but I think it can be done. I know it can be done. And then we also do have the old City Shops property, which will be an easier transition into affordable housing since the people already voted to have it go that way. It's just a matter of being able to get the plan made and get it out there, and that will help. I think also there are some zoning things that can happen. There's areas that are zoned, I think it's, I don't really want to quote zones because I get confused about the zones when I'm trying to speak generally, but I think that there are ways that we can encourage mother-in-law apartments above garages and things that may not be currently allowed with examining our zoning. And it just has to come to the forefront. There have been so many forums on affordable housing over the years. I don't think that the need has been diminished at all. I think everybody is aware of the need. It's just a matter of finding solutions and coming together. I think there will also be some public forums coming up on that as well, and I would really encourage the caller and everybody else who's interested to check and pay attention and show up for that, because truth is, we really do need all of the minds to work together on this one, because it's been around. It's a big issue.
Aaron Swanson, Affordable Housing in Sitka.
I really would like to see affordable housing in Sitka, somebody that lives paycheck to paycheck. But besides that, I think the bench lands are an important part to the affordable housing issue. I'm a little concerned because I was looking at the assembly minutes, and one of the suggestions was sell the bench lands outright to one person. That kind of scares me, that one person, if they're not going to buy the land to lose money, they're going to buy the land to make a profit, or they could just use the land and build one house. I think there's other ideas. If you get the land cheap enough, basically if somebody in town has multiple lots, possibly offer them like a tax credit on their property taxes to sell, encourage them to sell those lots at lower rates.
All right. Aaron, thanks very much. Michelle puts your thoughts on affordable housing.
I'm nodding to all these folks. Rezoning, I think, is one of the first things we need to do. We need to have smaller lots. We need to have more multiple family housing opportunities so that you can develop something at a lower cost that's going to be cheaper to buy or to rent. I think developing the benchlands, and like Aaron said, making the development sort of some of that requirement being that you're going to have multiple small lots so that it can become affordable to families. Developing the city, can't think of what it's called right now, that city lot there by Burgess's building. And then I was also talking to the Baranoff Island Housing Authority. I think that we've definitely got to work with those folks and figure out how to do that development. They are doing some really great work, and they pointed out to me that, you know, they're not just for the Native community, they're for all of us. So figuring out a way to work with them to get more housing built at lower costs.
All right. Thanks very much. To email we go for real now. And a question from Katie, who writes, I'm just going to read straight from the email here. In the last 4.5 years, there has been no dialogue and leadership regarding cultivating cruise ship visitation. What do you propose to do to change this and initiate active engagement and dialogue with cruise ship personnel to determine what they need from us to increase their visitation? Phyllis Hackett, we begin this round with you.
That always makes me ponder a little bit. I don't know how we engage the cruise ship industry in conversation. The cruise ship industry is are giant corporations. And it's really very challenging to engage giant corporations in any type of meaningful dialogue. We do have representatives from the cruise ship industries who tell us what the cruise ship industries want and say and need. I personally would like to hear it from the industry themselves. And I don't know how you reach those people. I do know people who have worked in tours and excursions and have been working with this industry for years and years and years, and after long, long, long relationships are, you know, get very excited when they finally get a call back from someone who's actually a decision maker with the corporation. So it isn't as easy as it sounds, and I don't really know the answer. We can go to the trade shows, but I don't know the answer to that.
Aaron Swanson, what would you do to better engage the cruise ship industry?
I think maybe we need another commission. I think that maybe the city needs to sit down and have a work session with the cruise ship industry, invite, you know, the executives from the cruise ship companies up here to Sitka and have a sit-down chat with them on what they want to see done, whether it be a deep-water dock or whatever it is that they want to bring more boats into Sitka to bring in more tourism, because I know that a lot of the businesses are hurting right now with the lack of tourists.
All right, so sit them down and chat and have that conversation. Michelle Putz, what do you do to engage the cruise industry if elected to the assembly?
I don't know for sure what I would do. I do think I do know that a lot of people have asked us to try to go to them. So do go to those the big shows that they have and try to talk to folks there. I don't know if that's the assembly's role, if that's the visitors, the Convention and Visitor Bureau role, or the Economic Development Association. I think we need to talk with those two entities and have that discussion as an assembly, and then try to figure out what we can do and what's worthwhile. I think it is going to be difficult. They are big corporations. You can't just reach them by phone. So it'll be difficult, but I think if we work together, we might be able to come up with the best way.
All right, Matt Hunter, engaging the cruise ship industry. How does that happen if you're elected?
Well, engaging the cruise ship industry, I believe, would be quite a challenge, especially since SICK is relatively small peanuts to them. I think what we need to do is work with, I believe it's the SICA Convention and Visitors Bureau, or maybe it's the SICA Economic Development Association, working on rebranding SITCA and coming up with a marketing campaign. If we can make people want to come here and call their travel agent and say, I want to go on a cruise to Alaska, and they'll say, okay, how about this itinerary? And they say, but I want to go to SITCA. If we get enough people to say, I want to go to SITCA, then the cruise ship industry will respond if that's what they hear. I think that's the route to go. And we need to support the marketing campaign, because a small investment, if it results in a single ship coming once a week, that would be a big return on that small investment.
All right. Thank you very much. We have a phone call, and we're going to go to that. Doric, go ahead. You're on the air.
A follow-up question to the visitor industry, enlarging on the question of tourism. I wonder if candidates have familiarity with either of the two visitor industry plans that were developed in past years, recently, I mean in the last several years, and whether or not that familiarity has produced anything.
All right. Thanks so much for your question. Let's begin that one with Aaron Swanson.
I am not aware of any of it.
Okay. Michelle Putz.
I attended that first meeting of the larger visitors group that was the collaborative group. I think I attended one or two meetings in between. Did not read through the entire plan, but did look at it when it came out. And then, of course, I know about the situation that kind of went on afterwards with the industry group and the tribe. We need to look at both of them. And see what we can do from both of them. There needs to be some work between them, it feels like. But that was a tough situation, and I do hope that we can increase visitors, but in a really, really sensitive way that meets the folks in SITCA's desires and wants.
All right. Matt Hunter, the visitor industry plans, either of them.
I remember reading about the tourism commission that was formed to work with the businesses, locals, city government, and the tribe. And I seem to remember it falling apart at the end due to some political issues there. That was a shame. However, it's been long enough since that last plan that maybe it's time for a new plan, or time to look at what the SICA Economic Development Association and the other groups have identified as areas of growth. To answer the caller's question, I'm not intimately familiar with the plan, but I do recall reading about them.
All right. And Phyllis Hackett.
I was on the steering committee for the first visitor industry plan, and it was a really incredible process. It was very long, as those collaborative processes can be. But it was very insightful, and I think the people that stuck with it really learned a lot and came to a lot of consensus towards the end of the process. I am not as familiar with the plan, the second plan, though I have read it. I've read it a couple of times. There is a tourism commission that was developed as a result of that second plan, and they are currently working on signage. And this goes back to the commissions, and perhaps the assembly needs to direct the commission to review those plans and come up with some recommendation from both of the plans. The assembly, the caller's right, the assembly has not done anything with the plans. There are other plans as well, the gateway plan that addresses a lot of these same issues. And I think that that is a point well taken in all of this discussion we have. We've had a lot of good energy go into those different plans. I know there's at least three that I know of, and I'm sure there's more than that sitting on the shelves. And it's important that we go back to it. So thanks for the reminder.